Mary Cassidy.
And this is Bill Ryan.
And this is Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio.
And we've got a slightly better connection than we had on Tuesday when we were trying to do a show with four people from the departure lounge of an airport in the middle of the US, and we didn't have any choices available to us. That was the only thing we could possibly do given our itinerary, and we want to apologize to people who were frustrated, probably just as frustrated as we were, by the quality of the broadcast. And as I remarked on our website, projectcamelot.org, the chaos that we were experiencing at that point seemed to be directly proportional to the importance of the information that we were trying to impart.
Well, actually, from what I understand of a couple listeners I talked to, they didn't have a problem with the quality. So maybe you got different feedback than I did, but I don't think we had such a problem. Apparently, from their end, they couldn't hear all the Hare Krishnas and the background noise that was going on.
It was very wild. It would be typical of the intelligence agencies to organize a Hare Krishna parade just outside the Camelot broadcast when we just come back from seeing a whistleblower. That would probably appeal to someone's sense of humor. But, okay, well, good. I actually didn't have particularly wonderful feedback here in Switzerland. It could be that people in different parts of the world are experiencing it in different ways. Anyway, Kerry, this is the first time that you and I have spoken today. I just arrived back in Europe yesterday evening, and as we said a couple of shows ago, when we get to talk to each other on air, this really isn't scripted or teleprompted. It really is the first time we've spoken to each other, usually for half a day. So what's new there?
Maybe for half a year. Things are good. We have so much going on behind the scenes it's pretty exciting. Obviously, we shot all kinds of film and audio for our recent interview with the whistleblower that we had mentioned, who goes by the name of Pete Peterson. We understand that, you know, there are other names that he also goes by.
Peterson is his real name. Pete is his nickname simply because he likes to be called Pete because that goes with the Peterson. One of the things he said to us, which I really enjoyed, was we were making a remark about one of the names that one of our other whistleblowers used to go by when he was in special operations, and Pete just smiled and said, yeah, he said, it depends what passport you're given that week, which kind of sums it up, you know.
Right. One thing that's going on is our project Avalon.net is off the air, off the grid, off the net. We're having all kinds of problems with our host, who shall remain nameless at the moment.
There's no need for it to remain nameless, because whenever anyone tries to get onto Avalon, they get a message from the host, which is called Poweb, and who have decided to shut us down, citing reasons which do not appear logical to us.
Not at all. So we are moving our host, and we are moving our site to other servers. So those of you that are trying to get into the forum, we apologize. It's a logistical difficult for some of the people helping us out who do so without pay, out of the goodness of their heart. I guess we're moving to a break now. So we are going to take calls tonight, today. The call-in number is 512-879-3805, and this is Project Camelot.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is Bill Ryan, and this is... Kerry, speak to me. Kerry, are you there? Okay,
I'm sorry, I was muted. I was just stunned and confused by the very interesting music we were experiencing there. I think I kind of lost it.
One of the problems is that now I'm completely conditioned to listening to John Lennon, as I expect you are as well. When something else
exactly.
comes on, I just think it's some kind of commercial, and we're waiting for John Lennon to give us the cue. So, long live John. We're clearly heavily entrained, and what we need to do is we need to specify our own music for this show. Apparently, we can't use John Lennon all the time. Just as I was getting used to him, because it's one of the signature tunes for another show on the same network, so that's problematic. Anyhow, nothing that concerns our listeners. We apologise if you're looking forward to John as much as I am. Okay, Kerry, what should we talk about?
Okay, well, there's a number of things to talk about, actually. One of the things is that I was deep in conversation with a friend the other day, and not that I was revealing any of the secrets that we had come across recently, but one thing the person was talking to me about was the fact that they were really concerned over the over humanity and what we might be facing in the future as a result of some of the things we'd heard from our recent whistleblower, as well as many other whistleblowers and people out there talking to us, which include the crash of the dollar, the change of the currency, the possible chipping of humanity. There's a whole list, as many of you will know. And one of the things that I was saying is that, yes, we've heard all the stories, and actually whenever we get a whistleblower that comes from working in black projects and secret space programs, etc., it's important to note that these people are definitely in on the program or the agenda of the Illuminati and what is being rolled out from their end. But what they don't have are the keys to the kingdom. In essence, they're not necessarily in touch with the positive ETs, and they also are not necessarily all that spiritually evolved, such that they would be tapping into what other levels are operating here. So we're in a multidimensional universe, and I just want to say that that's just one side of the story. And that also doesn't include consciousness and where consciousness on the entire planet is going. And that's, a multi-level discussion as well.
I'd like to just add something else to that. And Kerry, I'm getting an echo, by the way. You need to put your headphones on, please, because I can't hear myself talk. So let me continue with Kerry's echo, which you just finished in my ears. Okay, good. I'm not sure if it's quite fair to say that our whistleblowers aren't necessarily spiritually involved. We do have some very remarkable people there. But I think another angle which you didn't mention that is the case is that many of them have a military background. Now, for instance, our latest whistleblower, though he's an astonishingly talented scientist, Dr. Pete Peterson, he had spent his time in the Marines and in Vietnam, and quite a few of our whistleblowers have been in the military in one guise or another. And if you're in the military, you start thinking about defensiveness. You're trained to think about the things that could go wrong and ensuring against them and preparing plans in case this happens and that happens. And you've also got a pretty high confront in terms of the fact that you're willing to look at bad news and say, okay, this is the situation, let's get on with it, guys. And military people are basically not trained just to cross their fingers, hope for the best, look on the bright side and think that everything that they hear is bad news. Military people don't work that way. And so I think that's part of what's playing out here, that we're getting testimony from military people who are saying, okay, guys, we're in a kind of war here, and we need to tell the truth about what's going on. Now, that training may have skewed the balance of what we're trying to describe here. And on our video that we're going to publish as soon as we possibly can do, there's a fascinating on-camera discussion between Pete Peterson and David Wilcock. And those of you who have followed David's work over the many years that he's been active, doing a wonderful job. We love him to bits. He's a great friend, and he's doing a marvelous service. But he is resolute in his intention to make sure that people don't buy into bad news and therefore bring it on. And the discussion that he had with Pete Peterson really is, I think, I hope once it's edited it's going to be as good as I thought it was when I saw it taking place. Would you agree with that, Kerry? Kerry, unmute yourself and speak to me. We've lost Kerry, no problem. Okay. What I'd like to do until we get round to the bottom of the hour, at the bottom of the hour we'd like to take some calls, is I'm going to go through a very long list of material that we learnt from Pete. I tried to condense it down a little tiny bit, put it on the website. There are things that we are not at liberty to talk about because they're highly classified, and we have given our witness a promise that they will go no further. And what I have here is a pretty random list. I was just jotting notes down when I was on the plane, because I thought, until we listen to the 6 to 8 hours of audio that we've got, simply when we were in the restaurant or drinking coffee, besides what we recorded on video, I'm actually going to forget all the details of what we talked about, so I was trying to note it down before I actually went over the audio records. And so I'm going to...
I actually want to say that we are not necessarily under any kind of oath not to talk about what he told us. What he said was that if we did, we would get a visit that we wouldn't like, quote unquote, and that some people have died for talking about some of those things. So that was the information that, you know, that was how he approached it. He didn't say we couldn't talk about it. He said he was concerned for our safety. So,
we have to pick and choose
the people that we do tell. And since our whole reason for getting in touch with whistleblowers and is to determine, you know, the secrets and to reveal the secrets to humanity, actually we have to weigh, how much, risk we want to take on those levels and whether or not indeed there is a risk, because there's another level that can be considered when we go and get in touch with a whistleblower, and that is that some things could be set up. There could be they could have pre-knowledge using remote viewers, looking at the future, looking at various aspects, using perhaps Yellow Cube, that if you're familiar with Dan Burish and our information on that score that you would be familiar with. They have ways of possibly tapping into what may be coming, and certainly they've been looking at us and our future trajectory and so on, and certainly they've been trying to trip us up in various ways, more psychological than in more obvious ways, I think. But at any rate, I do want to say that, you know, we're not naive, and that there could be a lot of different levels to what's going on in any given group of information that we do receive. In other words, you can think of it as one of the things that Pete talked about was the fact that the Illuminati has to put the information out there because it's one of the laws of the universe that in order for them to be successful, they actually have to talk about what they're going to do. They have to affect the information field, as that's how he labeled it. And so they actually, that's why, and one of the reasons I would say there are others, but, that's why he is always, and other people are putting this information out. In essence, they have leaks, but they're purposeful leaks. And the purpose is behind them is multi-leveled, but one of those purposes is in essence to prepare the ground in terms of consciousness for people to be aware that something may be coming. In a way, it makes you a receiver, if you will, of that information. And then it's really how you deal with it. You can become sort of a co-operator, meaning that you're allowing that thing to transpire, or you could actually, in sort of a Tai Chi way, move that energy in another direction and actually turn it toward the positive. So there's a lot of subtlety going on here, and it's not just black and white. I just really want to make that clear.
Not just black and white is for sure. One of the things that he mentioned was that the date which he had been told that there was going to be a disclosure of information by President Obama about the reality of contact with five or six different extraterrestrial races was one of the dates that Richard Hoagland has identified. Not the dates themselves, but the class of dates, which is done through seen through occult eyes, I guess, in as much as many of the launches, many of the events, the moon landing, first moon landing, whether or not it actually took place, and so on and so forth. These dates were all specific dates that had an occult significance. I do not have the details in front of me about what the connection factors are in that occult significance. I remember reading a paper by I'm pretty sure it was by Hoagland about this, that was really extremely interesting. It's on his enterprisemission.com website. And this date that has been picked, that we were told had been picked, I don't think anyone's going to get a nasty knock on the door for this. This is November 27th. It's one of those dates.
He
it's
talked
a window,
about
like a launch window.
Well, right. And for some reason, there were a lot of 27 dates, I have to say. And also he talked about the fact that 60 Minutes was already booked, for this disclosure by Obama. He also said that Obama his life may be in danger as a result of that.
It's quite interesting stuff. Yes. I agree that, he's one of these guys who was sort of who would be classified legitimately as an absent-minded scientist, in as much as he can invent things and make them in his laboratory that I didn't even know existed. And he said that Einstein was an idiot and so on and so forth, and yet he can't remember names and dates very easily, because those are the kind of things that he delegates to his wife, which is really very funny, very charming, very human. And actually very understandable, because this is a problem that you have, Kerry, too. With all your brilliance, you can't remember names, dates, and numbers either very easily.
Yeah, there's a name for it. He called it not being able to remember nouns, I think he said.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Anyway. Enough of that. This is just to say that we are not gonna pin our reputations on the fact that this date is correct. It is what he told us. We will find out more about whether it's correct or not. But it doesn't really matter, you know, whether it's the 27th, the 25th, or the 29th. If this is something that Obama is planning to do, then it's of huge significance. And what's also significant here is that if there is some kind of a global infrastructure collapse, or a global financial collapse, or an infrastructure collapse in some areas or some countries between now and then, whether it's a crash or whether it's just a kind of slow slide or an increasing slide, a bit more of a slide than it is at the moment, because these things could happen in all kinds of varying degrees, the idea of a massive distraction by saying, oh, by the way, we're not alone in the universe, and this is what they look like, you know, and this is what they've told us, and this is the whole story. It's enough to take the mind off a lot of people, whether they've got quite as much money in the bank as they had last week. People are really going to think, this is amazing, and what a wonderful president for telling us this stuff, which is the kind of thing that Stephen Bassett has actually been saying for about a year now. He's been predicting that Obama is perfectly set up for this, and I must say, his logic is compelling. And
actually, I have to say that what Pete was aiming at in talking about the disclosure that Obama might be making, he was actually talking about how it will add to the chaos. I mean, you have to understand that although certainly maybe followers of Project Camelot and other sort of websites and topics of this kind might be cheering if somebody actually made an announcement of that nature, there, you know, the majority of humanity is not going to be cheering. They're going to be actually wondering what the hell has happened to their world, and they're not going to be so happy about it. So there's going to be huge chaos regardless if the economic situation transpires. And the other thing is that this will be one of the first steps along the lines of Project Bluebeam, and that we discussed Project Bluebeam with Pete, and he said it's very, very possible, although he didn't have any direct knowledge of his own. And Project Bluebeam is all about a faked alien invasion scenario that will be perpetrated by the powers that be with a purpose in mind. That is that people will be so-called rescued by certain ships, thinking that they are the good guys, when in fact they are not the good guys. And they won't be able to tell the difference, or at least many won't. And that there will be, threatening ships and a lot of holograms. And what was really interesting in our discussion with Pete is he didn't even want to talk about holograms. And I think that that points to the fact that there's something very significant about holograms.
Yeah, it's a little hard to conclude exactly what he knew and what he didn't know. Project Bluebeam is what he asked us. He didn't verify the name for us. When he asked us what we meant, we talked about the hoax alien invasion, and he said yes. He said that's entirely possible. And he didn't talk about holograms. You're quite right. But it all depends how this is spun. You know, what we were told was that Obama was going to reveal details of contact with friendly races, and that doesn't quite fit with the alien invasion scenario, although, of course, any good scriptwriter would have a ball with all the permutations of possibilities that there are here in terms of presenting, you know, here are the good guys, okay, so then we've got the bad guys, and the good guys are going to save us against the bad guys, and these are the good guys, and these are the bad guys, because the ships are different shapes, or all this kind of stuff, and it might all be wrong. It might all be completely spun around 180 degrees. We have no idea. I mean, it's way too early to tell. And the only thing that one can do is to be aware and to be alert and to just look at this whole thing. And if we get any information about this that we think is reliable, of course we're going to let people know. And at the moment we're just talking about the field in general. We do not know what's going to happen. We just feel pretty sure that something is going to happen. And personally, I have to say, I think the next 12 months are going to be extraordinarily interesting.
So we're going to break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, this is Bill Ryan. I guess that's our theme music. And
I'm Carrie Cassidy, and this is Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio. I think you should say that every time.
You think so, huh? Well,
yeah.
This time, okay. I do agree, actually. We've just been writing to each other over the break here, deciding exactly how we should proceed. I'm just going to read some items from this list. This list is a shopping list, basically. It's for the benefit of people who might not have had time to take a look at the Camelot site, which I updated partially a couple of days ago. And this really is a shopping list. It's not even like the most important things are up front. He confirmed the existence of the Aurora space plane and said that had been retired from service because now it's been replaced by vehicles that are capable of superluminal travel. He confirmed the existence of the TI-3B, the large flying triangle, that he said was an aircraft carrier. And I really like that idea. It's very obvious.
Yeah,
really.
I
never thought of it as an aircraft carrier, but yeah, it's an aircraft carrier. He said that alien implants are very real, though he didn't know, he didn't seem to know much about the ETs themselves. He described most of them as being friendly, but he said not all of them were friendly. And what was really significant was something which I'm sure we can say, is he told us, not on video, but he did tell us separately, that although he had got to the point in his life and his career with his ethics and his values where he disliked working for the government. He did say that he continued to give the government a hand in certain specialist areas because they needed help, and the reason why they needed help was because some of the ETs were unfriendly. And that's the kind of thing where, you know, even if you don't like your own government, you might like your own government more than whatever it is that they're up against out there, because you're representing the human race, and of course this is the stuff that science fiction movies are made out of. But he was very serious when he said that. He was not
I think he would say that also he's a patriot. So on top of the fact that he wasn't just going to go help anybody, he is very much an American patriot. So that he's actually feels that that he will dedicate himself to make sure that America survives, in essence.
I think he wants to make sure that the human race passes through this transition in as best a shape as possible. I mean, he did say to us that if he had the resources to do so, if he was in a position to do so, or if he was the citizen of any other country, he did say that he would leave the US immediately, and that says something. We've spoken to several people, of course, one of them, as many Camelot followers will know, who we first contacted over a year ago, is George Green, who's been working to leave the US for quite some time and has got at least one foot in Ecuador at the moment, and he was talking about how many of his insider contacts were leaving to go to South America. Pete Peterson confirmed this. He said that a lot of people are going to Brazil and Paraguay.
Yeah, he also talked about an ozone. There's an ozone hole above Ecuador that he said would keep him out of Ecuador.
And, yeah. And a lot of people. He wasn't saying that Ecuador was a no-no. Basically, he was just comparing Ecuador with some other countries and saying that that was one reason why he wouldn't go to Ecuador, given the choice. He would rather go to Paraguay or Brazil. Apparently, a lot of people are going to Brazil, which is really quite interesting. Let me continue to run through my shopping list here.
It's our shopping list, thank you very much, but okay.
It's a shopping list that I made. It's a shopping list that I made. One of the lovely little anecdotes that he told was that the Mir space station was incredibly heavy. It was very, very massive. And the reason why it was massive was because of all the lead shielding that it needed in order to protect the cosmonauts there from the radiation from the Van Allen belts, which he said was one reason why he was absolutely certain he was putting his scientific reputation on the line, which is considerable, saying there's absolutely no way that people went through the Van Allen radiation belts in the Apollo capsule on the way to the moon. He said that it was possible. In fact, when we told him what Henry had told us, that there was extraterrestrial technology, a sort of nanotechnology shield that may have been incorporated in whatever vehicle it was that did go to the moon, he nodded. He seemed to know about that. He didn't tell us any specific details. But the Mir space station was very, very massive because of the lead shielding that was needed. And he said this was so heavy, it would have taken thousands of shuttle loads or hundreds of shuttle loads to get it up there. And he said that wasn't doable by us, and it wasn't doable by the Russians. And so we said, well, that meant that we must have had some help from our friends. And he said, well, yes. He said, what do you mean is the Russian friends? Because the Russians have their friends and we have our friends. Friends in inverted commas here. We're talking about friends in high places. And I thought that was really, really quite interesting. The idea that the Russians themselves had their own extraterrestrial contact and ETs that may have aligned themselves with them and given them a hand in specific areas. That was very, very interesting to me. Kerry, speak to me. She's muted herself again. No problem. Okay. Something else that he mentioned, and this is going into areas of science that David Wilcock was particularly interested in, when he was with us. He described Einstein as being wrong. He was actually quite disparaging about Einstein. The scientist who he said was a genius and who he should pay a lot of attention to, and much of whose work had not been taken up by 20th and 21st century physicists, was the Scottish physicist and mathematician James Clerk Maxwell. He said that Maxwell had left a legacy of a lot of wonderful work, much of which had not been explored, had not been taken any further. He wasn't able to speak too highly about James Clerk Maxwell, and that was really, really interesting to me. The other source of physics and mathematics that he spoke very, very highly of was the work of the Russians. And one of the things that he did, which he spoke to us about on camera, was during the breakup of the Soviet Union, when many of the scientists were being underpaid or not paid at all, and there was a whole lot of chaos there. He was running missions there for a certain agency to rescue certain scientists and bring them back to America. And he said that some of the work that he became acquainted with during the course of those missions, which is now in the hands of the Americans, was very brilliant work. And he said that now, of course, this is being brought back to America, it's all being put to good use, but some of the work was very brilliant mathematical work. And of course, this is something that David Wilcock has been speaking about for years, the Russian contributions to torsion physics and so on and so forth. And our man is in a position to say a lot about that, and had a lot of conversations with David about that. What else? He confirmed what many people have long suspected, which has been leaked out on the internet for several years now, which was that most of the interesting action that was going on at Area 51 back in the 90s, this has been moved to Ohio, and that matches.
It hasn't been moved to Ohio. It's been moved to Idaho.
Oh, sorry, not Ohio, Utah. I'm sorry, Utah. I beg your pardon, not Ohio.
Idaho,
yeah.
Idaho, yeah. And Utah.
Correct. Yeah. And it matches what we were told. Do you remember, Kerry, what we were told by Sean David Morton, who was running expeditions up to Freedom Ridge back in the early 1990s, where he had a television show, and he was instrumental in bringing a lot of public attention to Area 51 and the fact that it was visible and you could see what was going on and so on and so forth. And he was told by an insider contact of his that he personally had cost the American military billions because they had to move everything because so many people were now looking at Area 51. Do you remember he told us that?
Yeah, I do. Although I think that there's a bit of a misdirect going on there. There is still plenty of stuff going on at Area 51 underground. It's just all one big, underground base. It stretches from Area 51 all the way through north to Idaho, I'm sure. And I think that John Lear was also talking about the base in Nevada that I forget the name of it, but it's over a little more to the east. You know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about Sandia?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Yeah, I don't think Sandia. I don't think they run black aircraft out of Sandia. I think it's a research base. But that's something that we would have to ask John about. He would be a good person to have on the show. We could really do that, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. He's fabulous. Well, actually, what goes on underground is something that we can't really verify.
One thing that he did mention, as one would expect him to, was the existence of a number of what he called underground cities. And this is no secret. Bill Deagle talks about this. Every whistleblower worth their salt talks about this. It's really common knowledge. But it was just something that's interesting because this was part of his conversation that came up fairly regularly.
Well, I wanted to talk about some of the stuff he talked about having worked with Hal Puthoff at SRI. And he talked about the most important remote viewing book out there. It's called Psychic Warrior by David Morehouse. And in many quarters, if you talk to a lot of teachers of remote viewing, they will pan that book. They will tell you there's nothing but lies and so on. As a matter of fact, that's not true. It happens to be very, very accurate. And I thought it was fascinating that he would admit that.
That was true, yes. He said that that if you really want to find out the important core of the remote viewing program, then you should read what David Morehouse wrote. And then he said that that was quickly followed by a number of books and various releases of information from various people. And he said that some of those were misdirects, whether accidentally or deliberately, those were misdirects. And if you really want to get the core of it, then you should go to David Morehouse. And that's very interesting. That was a book.
Another thing is he talked about how, you know, remote viewing teachers will, and a lot of the group that came out of the Stargate will tell people that there's only certain things possible with remote viewing. And he actually said that there's a lot more possible, including remote influencing. And actually, there's a huge gamut. And I think that our interview with Duncan O'Finian would demonstrate some of the things that are possible with remote viewing and with the psychic warrior, in essence. So I think that there's a lot more there than meets the eye. And for people that have experienced it, of course, they will know what I'm talking about.
I'd agree with that. Let me look at this list that we've got here.
He was also talking about the brain drain and alternative three, that there has actually been, there have been reports of scientists that have disappeared, some even that have been thought to have died, but their bodies have never been found. And in essence, there is something of a brain drain going on, a la alternative three, for those of you who are familiar with that, both here and possibly as a result. I know Henry Deacon talked about that also with regard to our underground bases on Mars and the Moon.
What was interesting was he was not able to confirm any of the more extraordinary and esoteric details that Henry had reported. It was something that he didn't seem to know anything about. When he was referring to the brain drain mentioned in Alternative 3, he was talking about people actually being relocated to underground bases, not so much off-planet.
Right, that's what I just said.
Sure.
We're going to go to break now. We'll be right back.
Don't leave me. Look around. Choose your own ground.
Psychotic, psychotic, pig-headed politics. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short head, yet a belly son.
Okay, this is Bill Ryan here with Kerry Cassidy on Whistleblower Radio, and I was allowing that music to play just because I love hearing that song so much. Now, we could go on talking about this for quite a long time. I'm very keen to take calls because they may well prompt us into some interesting conversation here in the absence of a guest. I'm going to take a caller who has been waiting for 47 minutes, and this is area code 239. Area code 239. Can you hear us?
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
There.
Hello.
Hi, hear us.
Hi, yes I can. Sorry about that, I was on hold, I got another call. Okay, I have a couple of big questions for you. I've been a ardent investigator for the last 3 years or so. I was kind of woken up by a 32nd degree Freemason I was working with and some real estate stuff. David Icke, Alex Jones, the whole gamut of pretty much everybody. And my main questions would be some conflicting info regarding UFOs as being demonic entities versus extraterrestrial entities, and where you see the dividing line. You know, we have guys like, you know, we have John Todd and Fritz Springmeier saying that they're demonic entities, that they're not actual intelligences. And then we, of course, have the majority of your interviewees that say they are, you know, higher intelligences, you know, benevolent. You know, I know you mentioned that there are some evil ones out there, but where do you see kind of a dividing line on that?
After you, Kerry, I've got my own answer, which I like to say. Why don't you go first?
Well, I mean, first of all, there are, you know, this idea of demonic entities, if you want to talk about them, those are intelligences.
Right.
And whether or not they inhabit positive entities from time to time is really sort of depends on your experience. What I would say is that there are positive ETs and there are negatively oriented ETs. What they're called is service to self versus service to others. It is the dominating sort of persuasion that determines what one is. This goes for humanity as well. We have humans that are more service to self than service to others. In the third dimension, you are mainly service to self. And therefore, the concept of just breaking things into black and white, demonic or non-demonic, is really kind of an overall generalization that is really couched in religious fear-mongering. And I think it's a superficial look at what is a very deep question. Ultimately, everything comes from God. So if you want to get into an esoteric discussion about it, I would say that both the positive and the negative come from the Creator, if you will, and that it's all about going back to the Creator. It's all about enlightenment, and there are no lost causes in essence.
Definitely with you on that. Definitely with you on that. But I'm also gonna, you know, if we're seeing both sides, you know, we got to see that these, you know, these negative entities are real. You know, and you see, you know, credible people talking about how, you know, they can manipulate form, and, you know, we get into quantum physics and the whole thing, you know, consciousness, thoughts are things, you know, we can manipulate our physical form, you know, so if these demonic consciousnesses are, you know, changing form, it opens up a, you know, it's such a can of worms, you know, like all this stuff, it, you know, it's such a can of worms.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to also answer, and then we should go to another call, and thank you for the call.
Yeah, sure.
And I kind of caught off guard. Thank you, too, for being the champions you are. Keep rocking in the free world. You're both incredible. Sorry, Bill. Please continue.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yeah. It's a huge topic, and it's a very important one. Let me tell a little story here, because last night I had a weird dream, and the dream I had was that I was in my car and that there were nameless, shapeless people outside of my car trying to break into my car, and I locked the car, I stayed in my car, and they weren't able to get to me. And then I woke up and I realized that what I was dreaming was actually a real representation of something that was happening to me in my sleep. I was getting attacked in my sleep, and I locked them out because I didn't let them in my space. I'm certain that that's what happened, and those weren't flesh and blood ETs who were trying to get into my body. Here I was being attacked by something spiritual. Now, that doesn't faze me particularly. Many listeners will have had the same kind of experience, and if you know something about how to handle that kind of stuff, it's no big deal. But that's not to be confused with the flesh and blood ETs that use quasi-spiritual abilities in order to move around the universe. And this is something that David Wilcock describes very well when, I think it was in our interview with him, after when he was representing the testimony from his whistleblower contact, who he calls Daniel, which is basically what you do is you sit in the chair of a UFO, and you're not kind of flying the thing anywhere like a rocket ship. What you're doing is you're using mental abilities to open up a wormhole in front of you, and then you decide where you want to go, and then you go and you're there. And this is where the Montauk chair came from, David's contact was told. And one of the things that Philip Corso described in his book The Day After Roswell was that one of the problems was that the ET pilots were essentially part of their craft using advanced spiritual abilities melding with the high technology in order to zip around the universe through hyperspace, bilocating with technological assistance, as it were. And this is something that Pete Peterson talked about as well. He talked about technological bilocation. But the problem is that the human pilots aren't able to do that very well because we're too unstable and their minds are kind of thinking about all kinds of stuff. And this is the music again. Here we go. Okay, so...
yeah, we have a commercial coming up. I do want to say that demonic entities can inhabit both human and alien. So yeah. That's just... Or ETs, for lack of that.
Okay. Here we've got John Lennon here. So we'll listen to that and we'll go to a 3-minute break and then that takes us through to the top of the hour. And after that, we'll continue to take calls.
Absolutely. This is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan. We're Project Camelot, and this is Whistleblower Radio.
And we're going to take another call here from area code 410. 410, you're on the air. 410,
hello, you're on the air.
Can you hear us? And he's been on for 51 minutes, so he's probably... making a cup of tea. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. If you ever come to the phone, this is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan. We're on the air with area code 410. Okay. No. I guess not.
Okay. He's not there. That caller, if you want to hang up and you want to call back again, then we'd love to hear from you. Okay. Let's look at what else we can talk about. I'll tell you something else. This is something that we got from... Now, it's always a little dangerous to say this kind of thing. And we're not trying to alarm anybody, but we're trying to put pieces together. And one of the things that we heard in an anonymous email... And anonymous emails are always to be guarded against a little tiny bit, because you can't get back in touch with the person and say, hey, wait a minute, what do you mean by this? But they said that they had learned from an insider colleague that there were shipments being made by truck to a depot in California of signs. And on those signs was written something like, this area is under martial law. We didn't know whether to talk about this or not, because it's one of these things that we don't have any more information about. We can't prove it. It might have been a hoax. But at the same time, if this has truth to it, then we are duty-bound to report it. And there's something to do with each person who hears this and is concerned and is listening to this information with discernment. You need to make up your own mind and figure out whether this feels true for you. I have to say personally that I would not be surprised if that was true. It fits with a lot of information that a lot of people have been hearing from different sources. Carrie, I'd love to ask you what your personal take is on that. Do you think that that's likely to be the case, or do you think that this is overhyped and that might not be true?
Well, no, actually, I think it's perfectly possible. I'm not sure what kind of we seem to have some interference happening on the radio line here, so I'm not sure where that's coming from. Maybe our engineers can kind of work on that. But at any rate, I would say that, you know, there are all kinds of things going on. We've got, you know, testimony now from Pete as well as from George Green and other people, that there are, you know, sort of confinement camps being built all around the United States. I don't know about other places like Europe. They're all obviously preparing for something, and there's a lot to prepare for, judging from the testimony we're getting. So having signs saying, you know, martial law is possibly coming, that's not an out to lunch idea. Actually, if Obama does make an announcement such as he might, if Project Bluebeam, which seems like it might be on the radar for some time around 2012, 2011, does come to pass, or if there are other things that go on, such as earth changes, and so on, any of those things could bring on martial law at any juncture, really.
So yeah. It's just a snippet.
You could actually go to callers.
Okay.
If you'd like.
Our caller from area code 410 has hung up and has come back again, so let's take
We're about to go to break, so after the break let's take a call, okay?
We are about to go to a break, okay? So we are. Yep.
Okay.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Heart and Body Extract has a 23-year proven track record of using certified organic herbs that make up an excellent formula to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. In as little as 2 weeks, you can feel amazing results when your 2-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Deadline Live and Jack Blood are proud to announce our new bookstore. Okay, it's not really our online bookstore where you can get every title, book, and DVD you hear about on our live show. It's brought to you by the people at Brave New Books. BraveNewBookstore.com is the newest, bravest, and most complete bookstore online today. And their DVD selection has all the titles you need to decode the New World Order and fight the information war. BraveNewBookstore.com has awesome t-shirts to proudly display your patriotism and liberty stickers to alert the public at large. Brave New Books is physically located at 1904 Guadalupe Street under the Chase Bank Building next to UT in Austin, Texas. So stop on by and maybe stay for one of their film showings. Go to BraveNewBookstore.com now to peruse the virtual bookstore and look for the Jack Blood recommended section. Or call them at 866-516-6623. 866-516-6623 to order the books and videos you hear about on Deadline Live. Be the resistance. Tell your friends about BraveNewBookstore.com.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
Give Big Pharma the boot. Listen in to Natural Answers with Darren Craddock and Steve St. Clair, Saturdays from 11 to 1 only on Freedom Underground Radio.
Yeah.
I'm Gil Ryan, and we are Project Camelot and Whistleblower Radio. Okay, it looks like we're getting some communiques from people about some various dates. One here is coming in from a guy who is known as Waterman, looking and saying that he's got some information that is possibly about the date July 27th and what might be happening. We never know how to take this information. There are a lot of levels to whether it may be true, whether it may be an operation. You know, there's all sorts of stuff going on. He has been on an often on our Avalon site on the forum talking to people, and I'm not sure where he got his information, but it does sound interesting as to what might be going on. Again, it's that date thing, you know, 7/27. We've got 11/27, and I think there was another date too that we were giving that had this 27 in the number. So that's very interesting. On another note, I did want to talk about the fact that our witness Pete talked about how we did not go to the moon without help due to the Van Allen belt, and how he had created a device to measure radiation even on airplanes, such that people are actually getting what he said was amounted to, I think, a chest x-ray every few minutes whenever they fly, depending on the height of the aircraft, and that therefore we used what is sort of like this, they call it a TARDIS, that, you know, from the British science fiction TV show Doctor Who. It was like the British phone booth, in essence, and very similar to the testimony we got from Henry Deacon about just walking into this, in essence, what we call the jump room to Mars, to move from here to other planets.
Yeah, what he said was that he didn't have knowledge of any working device of that nature, but he did say that he knew how to build one, which is pretty cool, I guess.
But again, he did insist that I think that was something of a misdirect, because in essence he said we didn't go to the moon, but that we could get there using that device. So the implication there is that one was used, because on some level there has been space exploration, and we do have superluminal travel. So there are some areas where we got like a fragment of testimony that wasn't elaborated or doesn't actually link directly up with another fragment. It's very interesting doing this kind of work and getting testimony from somebody who is actually trying to stay true to whatever oath they've signed, and at the same time is coming forward because they are actually interested in clearing their record on a soul level and want to help humanity. And they realize that some of their past record, if you will, with the U.S. government has been, you know, damaged as a result of their association with working in black projects. And we had a similar thing with Henry Deacon. He would tell us little clues and you know, short sentences, and then we're supposed to piece together what they really mean.
Yeah. I think that the burdens that are carried by people who end up doing things that they struggle with their conscience about, I think it is almost impossible for us civilians to imagine what burdens those are, how they sleep at night, how they reconcile those things. I think it cannot be easy, and I don't think we can understand what that's like. But we do salute anyone who has the courage to break through that and say, you know what, I'm going to do the right thing here because most of my life is behind me and I have to do the right thing for humanity, and here we go. And we encourage anybody else out there who's listening to do the same thing. Even partially, try it. It feels good. The water's all right. You know, get in here and start to tell the truth, and you'll find that you'll be sleeping better at night. You're doing the best thing for the human race.
Well, I think that that's just the issue. We're getting to a juncture in you know, our sort of trail here with humanity and the journey we're taking, and that actually coming forward is almost the only thing you can do if you really do want to right the scales, so to speak, and at the same time possibly even save the human race, because we are in a race against time at the moment. What the situation that's been set up here, another thing that he said was that from his point of view, from what he understood, we only had 10 months left until this planet was completely polluted beyond saving, I guess, in essence.
Yeah. And that, that's the point of really no return.
Yeah, that we're at the point of no return. So that's where it's at. And I think coming forward is, you know, the best place to hide is out in the open. And obviously they have to weigh this. But we are in a war. It is a war for consciousness, if you will. And I do want to salute the people that are hitting the streets in Iran and in other countries. I think Honduras is now doing that. People are waking up. They may not have all the facts. They may not even know how to act. They may not be effective in the actions they choose. But the fact that they're waking up and taking action is very significant. And I just want to salute the wonderful people out there that are dedicated to getting a new way of governance, regardless of all the lies that they are faced with. And the fact that they may have two choices, neither one of which are ideal.
Yeah. I'd just like to back up a fraction and say just a tiny bit more about that message that came in before we go back to take another call, because it might have been tantalizingly thin for some people who weren't able to look at what it was that we were reading here. When Kerry mentioned the number 27, you're quite right, it's very weird. This number 27 keeps on coming up here. This refers to something which I did not know was happening, and we'll check it out as soon as the show is over, that there's a nationwide military exercise on July the 27th, and this person was giving us some details of that military exercise on the 27th. And I, for one, would like to know an awful lot more about that. He also made an enigmatic statement saying that forced vaccinations are on the way. How he knows these things, we don't know. This is the sort of message that we get every other day. Some of the messages are spurious, but many of them are absolutely real, and many of them come from people who themselves don't know the full story. They might not be even first-hand. They may be second-hand or third-hand, and you get all the laws of distortion that occur along the way, but behind that, there's truth. There is no smoke of this nature without a fire behind it. There's definitely things that seem to be coming to a head over the next few months. There's a huge amount of circumstantial evidence to support that.
I see that we have the caller from 410 again on the line here, so let's see. I'm going to click that and see if we can actually get this person on the line this time. Okay, area code 410, you're on the air with Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy. Are you there?
Hi, this is Wendy from Baltimore. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, I am such a fan of yours. Thank you for picking up my call. My name is Wendy from Baltimore. I'm a writer, and I help troubled spirits cross over into heaven. I do have psychic ability. I'm clairsentient and claircognizant, and I wanted to tell you about two dreams that I had. One real quick, I had a dream about this voice came in and said the animal kingdom will experience a big event soon. And I woke up from the dream in a panic thinking, oh, my God, the whales and dolphins are in trouble. And I know that from reading metaphysical material that the whales and dolphins may indeed check out and have a 3D death, but their light will remain because they are anchoring the light from the cosmos. The second dream I had was present day. We were all in darkness for about 5 days straight, and present day neighbors, present day clothing, which tells me that something is imminent. And I came away from the dream, and a friend of mine channels my daughter, Sarah, who's on the other side. I asked Sarah about the dream. I said, is this related to coronal mass ejection? She says, yes. it can cause darkness for, you know, meaning no electricity, no power, no water. In the dream, we had nothing for about 5 to 6 days straight. And there was some chaos, but the neighbors kind of got used to it. But it was going to last about 3 to 4 months with no power, no nothing. Again, it was more present day. And so Sarah, my daughter, who's on the other side, said, yes, it can indeed happen. It depends on the people. It depends on the earth, and it depends on the sun. Because if the magnetic field of the earth, if the sun has a coronal mass ejection and hits the earth at a point where the magnetic field is missing, then everything is going to get fried.
We are familiar with that, and thank you for sharing those two dreams. I think they're very interesting. We can't really say, obviously, if this is your dreams, whether or not this is true. Obviously, you know, everyone, there are a lot of people out there having these kinds of dreams lately, and right. I appreciate you sharing them.
Yeah, and just to make sure that people know, if a dream persists, it's an indicator that it's still part of the timeline. So just use your energetic discernment, tap into your gut and intuition to find out if that's really what is still on the timeline, and focus on the light. Only allow the purest and highest of love and light to enter your space, and just keep focusing on positive.
Okay,
positive
thank
outcomes.
You very much.
Thank
we're
you.
Gonna go to another caller, okay?
Thank you, Wendy.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, this fits again with another piece of tantalizing information that we got from the wife of an electrical engineer who was really freaked out because said his wife, who didn't hear from the engineer directly, because he had been asked to come up with solutions for an imminent problem, which was the burning out of transformers all over the national grid. It was.
Well, it's also Dan Sherman's testimony on our video interview with Dan Sherman, who was trained to communicate with ETs in the event of an electromagnetic, out across the planet. So this is something he was trained from a very young child to do. That's something that the military had obviously seen as a very real possibility and was preparing for. As many as I don't know, Dan Sherman is clearly at least in his 40s at this point. So we're talking about 40 years of preparation for such an outage.
Everything points to the same sorts of directions. In our opinion, these signs cannot be responsibly ignored, and that's our position on this. We have to bring this to public attention. Let's take another call here. This is area code 708. You've been on the line for about 20 minutes. 708. Can you hear us?
Hello. Hi. Carrie and Bill, this is Cynthia in Chicago.
Hi, Cynthia.
I'd like to say thank you. I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
I'd like to thank you both so much for doing all the hard work that you're doing for the rest of us. I did have a question. I'm just wondering, why did Pete Peterson decide to come forward at this time? Was there some event that precipitated his interest in talking, or, you know, I'm just wondering.
Well, actually, what happened was I was contacted by someone as a result of my putting the word out on our blog on the front page of Project Camelot, asking for organizers to help me organize our upcoming Awaken Aware in LA conference that we're holding, and that's September 19th and 20th for those of you that are interested. And so I was contacted by Doc Barham, who was on the radio and actually took the trip with us to go see Pete Peterson. He was a friend of Pete's, and basically what happened is we had a cancellation. Jordan Maxwell was originally slated to be one of our speakers, and he had to back out rather suddenly. And at the same time, Doc came forward and had some people that could be good speakers, and he suggested Pete as being a possible speaker. And I leapt at the idea of meeting him and talking with him. So I talked with him on the phone for about 2 hours, He's very eloquent, really stunning. He also, right over the phone, was giving me some very interesting information. So that's kind of the logistics behind what happened. But I think on another level, what I was saying before about realizing that I think that he actually has separated himself from working for the government, except where he feels it is absolutely the right thing to do because they, quote-unquote, need the help, and right. that he is trying to kind of clear up his own sort of soul record, if you will. And so that's why he's moving forward. He also is very concerned that humanity is not aware that of what may be about to transpire in terms of, especially here in America, in terms of things like martial law that he feels is coming before the end of the year, I have to say. I mean, he is saying that these events are going to transpire in the next few months. So that's part of his being propelled to come forward at this time.
Right. So he's feeling some urgency, too. And I wonder how it's related to whether or not Obama's going to make some kind of an announcement, too. So. Curious
yeah,
time.
It was linked to that. I'm sure it may be linked to that as well. Thank you very much for your call, Cynthia.
Sure.
Thank you, Cynthia. This really is Whistleblower Radio because I've just had a message here on my personal Skype saying that somebody is going to call us. Carrie, this is area code 580. If you see it on there, and I don't.
Okay.
This person is the person that we were talking about just now, who has knowledge of forced vaccinations, which he says are being prepared. I'm reading this. He says mandatory vaccinations are being prepared as we speak. Do you have time to chat? I said call into our radio show, and he said right. My area code is 580. I will call in.
Okay. Yeah. He also says, it looks like he also says here that he had a discussion with a senator about this very thing, about something happening on July 27th. You know, I'm not sure where it goes from there, but it's an interesting concept.
Let's watch for the 580 number. Take that. With excuses to anyone else who's been hanging on in there, we do need to take this call, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay.
We've got about 1 minute left before the break, Carrie.
Let's quickly take one more call. We don't have time. I'm sorry, caller.
We don't have time.
So hold on.
Be back in 3 minutes.
Song. This is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan, Project Camelot, and Whistleblower Radio. It looks like we've got an important call coming in, so I'm going to try to take this call right away. Hello, you're on the air. Is this our caller?
Hello.
I can't say what your area code is because it actually says asterisk restricted. So who am I talking to?
Hi, this is Waterman. That's probably what you know me by.
Oh, hi, Waterman. How are you?
Good.
Nice to hear your voice.
Well, it's good to be talking to you all. I know that I had sent and gotten some information to Bill and just downloaded another bit of information. And what it had relation to earlier was that information that I had about underground facilities in the Midwest. It's on the Kansas-Missouri border. I have a friend that got me in there deeply. Now, I don't know how deep underground the surface is, but I know how deep in horizontally. It's 38 miles, and that's quite a bit of they have semi. Tractor, trailer, highways in there, and they're going about 45 miles an hour. So they're pretty deep. And I've got a call from a friend, and they've gotten kind of busy. And so apparently a lot more busy than normal and a lot more military activity. I don't know what's up. But anyway, I always told Bill that I would tell him if I had any kind of information about that. Having been in there, I have seen the facilities, and when I saw them, you can't really, it's a civilian-faced facility. Of course, it's a interesting venue. It has all the flags from all over the world flying out in front of it. It's like a free trade zone at the entrance, and nations, flags from all over the world are out front. But when I went in there and you brought me in.
I'm sorry, is this, the information that you had said was something about, you know, an exercise going on the 27th of this month of July. Is there some reason why, besides the activity that you're seeing, that you think that there's something up?
Well, it might be because I can't really say that it is directly, but it might be because, you know, the military is active with the efforts of these people in that area at an unusual level. I think they're probably related. Of course, I have some folks in Montana telling me that you can't get into some motels out in the state of Montana. They're booked through the months of August, September, and October, of course. So that's an unusual long period of time. I think that we probably already know why we have issues coming down the pike. But it's interesting that some people, it's not, some of these areas that I think are black ops would be a lot harder to get into. I mean, there was security there. And if I were trying to get in by myself as a civilian person, even though there were military vehicles there, I probably couldn't have gotten in. But this person that I knew was security, so he brought me in, and I did get to see it. But I didn't see any shiny things that could probably float in the air. They all had wheels on. And but it was...
I remember the story, Waterman.
It was real ominous.
It's a pleasure to hear from you. Can you hear me there? Okay? Hello, Waterman.
Pardon?
Bill. Can you hear me?
Yes, I
Waterman,
can hear
hi.
You.
Sorry. I'm just making sure that we don't all talk at once here, but I just had a point of clarification because some of our listeners might not know exactly what you're referring to. This was about 10 years ago or so when a friend of yours who was a security guard gave you access to a part of a public facility that was not open to the public, and you told us that in that classified area of the public facility, the one that you just described, you saw hundreds and hundreds of new Russian and German vehicles. That's correct, isn't it? Do I remember that correctly?
Yes, that's exactly right.
And
the facility that housed it was behind very, very, very secure. I've never seen anything like it. The chains that went from the floor to the ceiling and from the walls were in solid rock, and it created a mesh, and the chains were big enough chains to pull a train, and they were creating a wall, a chain-link wall with a green canopy canvas like military cloth behind him, so you couldn't see in there, but he ripped it open with a knife and showed me, and it was amazing what we saw.
But that was 10 or so years ago, wasn't it?
Several years ago. Quite a few years ago. Now it's well known that this is a storage facility, probably for the food reserves that the United States government is probably supposed to be putting back in case there is an emergency. That's
okay.
Where it's mostly known for.
Okay.
And yet, there are still others.
But But is there some reason why you're telling us about this 727, like, other than the activity? Is it simply the activity that came to your notice, or is there something more going on there?
Okay. I didn't want to take up a lot of time chatting, but I, about 2.5-3 weeks ago, I had an opportunity to talk to the senator of the state I'm in. One of the senators. Anyway, I directly asked him if there was going to be forced vaccinations, which seemed to be looming on the horizon. Where did he stand on that? And that should he do that, that there would probably be among my profession, somewhat of a revolt, a resistance to mandatorily complying. Now, most doctors that would do that probably won't be participating in any government activity, and it would probably be a person that would stay in their clinic setting or in the hospital and not participate in providing those vaccines, because it doesn't take a doctor to give a shot. So when he answered me, it was very discouraging answer. He said it was probably the reason why the world is so healthy today. But not all of us take that position in this profession. We don't all believe that vaccines cured the world. Probably the most important thing that cured the world was soap and water. So anyway.
And you should clarify here for the listeners what your occupation is.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a professor of anatomy, pre-med, and nursing, and I run a biological alternative clinic, which I've been doing for a number of years, almost two decades now. Now, the other thing that happened at this meeting, I had one more question for him. It was a very informal meeting. There were probably about 15 people. It wasn't a meeting to hear a speech, or was it a one-on-one session with somebody that I know? I am allergic to politicians, so it wasn't because I was there as a friend. Anyway, I had an opportunity to go. So what ended up happening was, I also said, are you aware that there are rumors about an attack potential, whether it's a false flag, I didn't mention false flag, on the United States with a nuclear weapon? Now, they had some advisors there, and one of them, by the way, just happened to be the guy that will probably replace him when he leaves office, and he's in his last term. And how they know this, you know, I guess they have plans. Anyway, the fellow looked at me and he says, he looked shocked, and he looked at me in the eye and he says, we're aware of that problem. And he reached down and he grabbed an invitation, and he said, we'd like for you to come to this, and it's a movie about the potential nuclear threat on the United States, now that you've asked that question. And it was a private screening of a movie that was going to be held in this big church auditorium in the community where they were going to have it. And the name of it is 33 Minutes. So I thought that was interesting of note, in that here we already have, and of course you all know more than anybody probably how long it takes to produce and edit and make something like that available, and here it comes on the tails of a threat, a potential rumor of a nuclear problem or event in the United States.
33 Minutes is an interesting title, isn't it, Waterman?
Bill, I know you said something, but it wasn't quite clear.
Okay.
Carrie,
I said,
Yeah, I can repeat it so it's clear. Okay. Bill was noting that the 33 minutes in the title is an interesting title.
Right. And it is. And having in the event that people think things are just haphazardly done, I don't have to preach to the choir here. There's Kabbalistic ways they approach things and so forth. And as you look at the two different trees on the Kabbalistic tree, the one side being mercy and the one side not, kind of ministering justice, one's male, one's female, you of course know they're trying to collapse those two into the center to bring forth the senselessness of their effort. And those are why probably symbolically the towers could have been brought down to symbolize that, because now they're bringing the new building up in New York under one spire. Now, it's a complex. And the spire, the one single building, is going to be done right on time, and it's going to have the Statue of Liberty's, light or torch at the top at 1,776 feet tall. So, you know, the symbolism is there, but it has a dual purpose. Well, when you begin to look at the potential, when you get the potential of the name of a movie like 33, I did some research, and it could be that we're talking again about a nuclear event occurring at the 33rd parallel. So it's cloistered.
Well, let me say that if you look up the movie, it's actually on the web. You can look up 33 minutes, and you'll find that it is a new film, it says, about America's missile defense.
Right.
It's going to be released in the winter of 2009, so it's probably coming out in the fall. Sounds like you were invited to what's called an advanced screening.
Never been invited to one of them before, but I'm going to go, and I'll find out what's going on. And most importantly, I'll probably be chatting to the people there. It'll be interesting to see who comes. So, in fact, I'll keep you up to date on that.
Thank you. Well, thanks for calling, Waterman. This is very interesting, and we appreciate the information.
Waterman, thank you very much. We would like you to keep in close touch with us with this information that you're getting from various sources. We take it very seriously. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, we have some other callers on the line, so I guess we could go ahead and take one of those.
We have 1 minute, just to let you know. We have 1 minute.
Just for a second here. I'm clicking on area code 519. You're on the air with Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan.
Hello?
Hi. Are you there?
Yes, hi.
Okay, unfortunately, I'm going to break, but we'll pick you up on the other side of the break if you want to hold on. Okay, this is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan, and we're Project Camelot and Whistleblower Radio. I'm going to pick up this caller that we clicked on the other side of the hour. Hold on one moment. Go ahead, caller. Your area code 519, and you're on the air with Bill Ryan and Carrie Cassidy.
Hello. Hi. My name is Chris, and I just want to say, first off, I love what you guys are doing. I've watched pretty much all your videos, and much praise and much respect.
Thank you very much. Hello.
And my question is, with regarding to the people that are controlling world events, in your opinion, do you think that they control on a macro or micro level? And specifically regarding to some of the high technology that you guys have reported on.
Well, Bill, you want to handle that first?
Yeah, thank you. I believe that they control on a macro level, but there are many, many holes on a micro level. Let's look at it that way. One of the interesting things that we heard from Pete Peterson was that as far as he is able to establish scientifically, 15% of the population are not susceptible to mind control techniques. That's 15% of all races. Now, and that's quite a sizable minority of awake and aware people who are not necessarily going to buy whatever PR it is that we're being fed or urged to believe when it comes to things like we've just been talking about, connected with, you know, mandatory vaccinations or any other invented scenario. So I think that they try and control things on a macro level, but their control is incomplete. It's not total. There are a lot of holes in it, and our job is to make those holes bigger by waking more and more people up and equipping them with the information they need in order to wake themselves up by evaluating that information, checking it against what they know, talking to other people, helping to form communities, deciding for themselves, and taking the power back rather than just delegating it to authority figures and trusting that those authority figures are going to manage their lives for them, because they might not manage them in the way that we all like. That's my best answer to that question.
Okay.
I would like to say that it depends micro and macro. You have to determine whether you're talking about the Earth or the solar system or cosmos, how many universes you're talking about. Obviously, here on Earth, you can talk micro and macro, but in the truest sense of the macro, I don't think they're in control at all. It's just here on the third dimensional Earth that we're talking about. And actually, they're losing their grip. That's the whole reason they're trying to tighten the noose, so to speak, around the necks of the populace, so that they can maintain the control that they're actually losing as a result of the rise in consciousness around the planet. So there's an actual reverse relationship between the amount of repression that goes on and the rise of an awakening of consciousness. It's a very interesting dynamic, and I think more study should be put into that. That's that side of things. But thank you for your call.
Absolutely. Thank you. Very good answer. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think absolutely, things are getting tougher for the controllers, and there is a wave of rising awareness and responsibility, people waking up all over the place. And we're a very small part of a huge team of people who are doing that, many of whom are not working on an earthly synchronized way, but we're all here for the same purpose. And it's at that point that sometimes things can get the most dangerous, because it's like having a cornered tiger, and that's when the tiger might be most dangerous. I think tigers are wonderful animals, but tigers get scared. And then when tigers get scared, then they have very sharp claws and very sharp teeth. And that's when they might just do something stupid, like set off a nuclear device somewhere just to, you know, just because they can, you know.
Yeah, I do want to say that we only have 5 minutes left, and we do want to announce that I guess you're not going to be with us next week because you're going to be involved in your Zurich conference. Do you want to talk about that, Bill?
Yeah, sure. Next week, with apologies, on Tuesday and Thursday, I'm not going to be able to join Kerry on the show. She's got a couple of guests lined up, which she's going to talk to you about in a minute. On Tuesday, and this is indirectly associated with the Zurich conference, which is going to be on the 10th to the 12th of July. That means it starts a week tomorrow in 8 days' time. Dr. Brian O'Leary, who we love greatly, comes from Vilcabamba, is flying in on Sunday. And when he was in his early 20s as a young man, he climbed the Matterhorn, man after my own heart. I'm a mountaineer, as many of you may know. And he hasn't seen the Matterhorn since then, and his wife, Meredith, has never seen it. And so I'm going to take him to the Matterhorn, not to the top of the Matterhorn, we're taking him to the bottom of the Matterhorn, so that he can look at the mountain again. The mountain hasn't changed, though he has a little bit since those days. He's had a huge amount of experience under his belt. And as a mountaineer, I know he'll be a very happy man to see the mountain again. It's a very special mountain. So that's what I'm doing on the Tuesday evening. I'll be traveling back from the Matterhorn with Brian. And on Thursday, by this time, Dan Burish and David Wilcock will have joined us all in Zurich, and I will be filming a future talk, a video conversation between David Wilcock, Dan Burish, and myself. And that is something which will be extraordinarily interesting, I think, for the three of us. And so we're going to capture that on camera, and that's going to be released as a Camelot interview. So that's going to be occupying me then. There is the possibility, I'm only just thinking of this as we speak, that seeing as Dan Burish will be right here, we might be able to persuade him to say a few words on radio, but he certainly doesn't know about this, and I've never asked him about this, and so I don't know whether he would comply. But there are a lot of convergences going on here, and let's see what we can do. But basically, I'm not planning to be on air next week, with my apologies to everyone.
Yeah, so I will actually have full reign and cause as much trouble as I possibly can. You're listening to Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan, Whistleblower Radio. And please do tune in next week to listen to my shows. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.